Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is December the 5th. We are in Sefer Shmuel. We're still in Perek Beis, Chapter 2. And we left off with several questions. And tonight we're going to try to cover at least two of them. One of the questions we had was why or how the punishment of the B'nai Eli could go on for many generations. That was one question. How could it could go on for it seems like forever. And the other point we were going to discuss is the two strains, the two families of Kohanim, because Hashem says that He's going to replace the leadership of the Kohuna with a different family, and that the family of Eli would not cease to be Kohanim. They would still be there, but they would have a secondary role, which means that they would constantly see the other Kohanim in the leadership position. So let's start with the second one first. What are these two families of Kohanim?
The rabbi first.
Where does it say? Well, the Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, it says, "Lachenu Hashem." Therefore, says Hashem, "Elokei Israel, Amor Amarti Beisko Beisavicha Yistalku Lefanai Ad Olam." I had said that your family and the house of your father would go before me forever. V'atanu Hashem. Now it says Hashem, "Chalila li." It should be chumim for me. I won't do that. Ki mechabdai achabedu vozaye kalu. Those who honor me, I will honor. Those who degrade me, will be rejected. Hinei yamim vayim. The days will come. V'gadati ezro acha v'ezro beisavicha miyozakim v'esecha. So first he says, I'm going to make it. There won't be anybody old in your house. They're all going to die young. And Lamed Beis 32, he bat to tzar ma'on. You will look and see a tzar. You will see a competitor in this place, in the Beis Hamikdash. B'chol asher yitiv es Yisrael. No, that will do good to Yisrael. So there'll be someone else as the Kohen Gadol anyway. So Rashi explains, this is coming from Chazal, that we know that Aaron HaKohen had four sons. He had Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Isamar. Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Isamar. Already in the Chumash, Aaron loses two children. Nadav and Avihu die, and they die without having had children of their own. So so there are only two left, Elazar and Isamar. Now, of those two, of the Kohanim, Elazar and Isamar, so which one is the Kohen Gadol? Elazar is the Kohen Gadol. Elazar is the Kohen Gadol, and Isamar plays a role as well in the Chumash, but Elazar is clearly the Kohen Gadol. He's called the Kohen Gadol. And he lives into the time of Yehoshua. And the Sefer Yehoshua describes his leadership and then the fact that he died towards the end of the book of Yehoshua. Elazar was succeeded by, anybody know?
Pinchas.
What's that?
Pinchas?
By Pinchas. Pinchas is Elazar's oldest son, and Pinchas becomes Kohen Gadol after Elazar. The family of Elazar were therefore the ones through whom the Kohuna Gedola, being the high priest, would go. The family of Isamar were Kohanim, but they were not going to be the Kohanim Gedolim. They would not be the high priests. There is a general rule that the Gemara mentions, which is that when Hashem is posik gedula on somebody, when Hashem bestows leadership upon a certain person, gedula means greatness, but it means a position of leadership, of srara, of some sort of authority. And when Hashem gives it to a person, the psak, the gzera from Hashem is that it will be in his family forever. When a person is given a position of greatness, that greatness is meant to be forever. Of course, it could then be lost. But the original gezeirah, the original decree from Hashem, is without any end. However, if they misuse their position, or if they don't live up to their position, then their family will not hold on to it, and it will be lost. So when Hashem gave the kahuna gedola, the being the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, to Elazar's family, it was meant to stay within his family forever. However, in the time of the Shoftim, in the time of the judges, and particularly with the very upsetting story of Pilegesh Begiva, which we have not learned because we didn't learn Sefer Shoftim together, but the story of Pilegesh Begiva, the concubine in Giva, the family of Elazar, of his line, at the Kohanim Gedolim, were held responsible for not having prevented that very troubling story from happening. That had they used their leadership properly, then that story would not have happened. It doesn't mean to say that Elazar's family somehow collaborated in that story. They did not. But the fact is that since they were the leaders, they are blamed for not having acted in a way that would have prevented it from happening in the first place. As a result, Hashem took the Kuhuna Gedola away from Elazar's family and gave it to Isamar's family. And Eli is a descendant of Isamar. And that's what it means that Hashem says in Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, Amar Amarti, I had said, Beischa uvei savicha, your house and the house of your father, yishalchu lefanai ad olam, they will go in front of me forever. Meaning your family now, Eli's family, the family of Isamar, will be the Kohanim Gedolim forever. Because the same rule applies. Once Hashem gives the greatness, gives that position to Eli, it is to stay in his family forever. It is never to be changed. Unless, of course, Eli's family doesn't live up to it. And unfortunately, the sons of Eli did not live up to it. And because they did not live up to it, the nevuah, the prophecy that's being said over here, is that it will switch back to Elazar's family. That because Isamar's family doesn't live up to it, it will now go back to Elazar's family. And when will that happen? It will happen in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. That we know that Shmuel is going to first crown Shaul as king. Then he will crown David as king. And during David's reign, there's going to be a rebellion from his son Avshalom, and David's going to run away. And during that time, we will see an episode where the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Evyasar, will attempt to ask Hashem for an answer through the Urim V'Tumim, through the Choshen, through the breastplate, and his question will not be answered, and Tzadok will be answered, a different Kohen. Evyasar is a descendant of Eli from Isamar's family, while Tzadok is a descendant of Elazar and Pinchas. And then Tzadok will formally replace Evyasar in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash, because there's no Beis HaMikdash in the time of David HaMelech, in the time of Shlomo, when the Beis HaMikdash is actually rebuilt, it will be Tzadok, the descendant of Elazar and of Pinchas, who will be the Kohen Gadol, not Evyasar. And that will be the fulfillment of this Nevuah, of this prophecy, that Isamar's family will be replaced by the family of Elazar, going back to the way it was prior to the story of the Shoftim. Now, it is informative to know that what is it that Elazar's family did not do that they were blamed for in the story of Pilegesh Begiva, that they lost the Kahuna Gedola in the first place. So, Rashi's language is, Shahaya lahem lesabiv meir el ir. They should have gone around from city to city, ulehochicham, and to admonish the Jewish people. As leaders, they should have been proactive in going around to the people and delivering mussar and admonishing the people to do the right thing. That is what Hashem expects of the family that is leading the people. The Elazar's family didn't do it, and as a result we had the story of Pelegish Begiva, so his family lost the Kahuna Gedola. It was then given to Eli. So that means that for Eli's family to retain the position, they would have to do that which Elazar's family wasn't doing, which is to go around from city to city and admonish the people. However, when we're introduced to the story of Eli and his sons, and we're introduced to Elkanah and Shmuel, we are introduced to a very diminished role for the Kohanim, and the role of the Mizbeach in Shiloh is also a very diminished role. And who is the one who reinstates that role? Elkanah. What does Elkanah do? Because he goes around, and when he goes up to be Ola Regel to go to the Mishkan, to the Mizbeach, he goes different routes and he popularizes the mitzvah. His son Shmuel, what he is known for is that we'll see later on that wherever he went, Kisham Beso, there was his house. Shmuel was always on the move. He did not sit in one place. He went from city to city to city to city, constantly going around to teach people Torah and to admonish them if they weren't acting properly and to be available for the people. And that was what Shmuel did better than anybody else. The family of Isamar, in the form of Eli and his sons, were expected to correct that mistake of Elazar's family and to be taking the message to the people rather than waiting for the people to come to them and go around. And they did not do so. And as we have learned, the sins of the Bnei Eli, although they were not horrible sins, as we've explained what the sins actually were, but there clearly is at least an element of the Kohanim being a little bit disconnected from what's going on with the people, what's going on in the Mishkan, as we explained, and therefore the family of Isamar loses the Kahuna Gedola and it goes back to the family of Elazar. We will see as we move along how these events transpire. We'll see what happens with the children of Eli, with the children of Elazar, with that exchange between Evyasar and Sadok that I mentioned. That won't happen for a little while still. But this is what will be. And as far as we know, that is what is the story today. As far as we know, the Kahuna Gedola rests squarely in the family of Elazar, and that the family of Isamar plays a secondary role in the Beis HaMikdash. They're still Kohanim. Make no mistake, a Kohen is a Kohen. But there are different families within Kohanim. We tend to lump Kohanim into one group and Levim into another group, but we know that Levim aren't all the same. That there are three families of Levim. There's Gershon, Kehas, and Merari. Of those three, we know that Kehas is the, so to speak, leader, the greatest of the three. That's who Moshe and Aaron come from Kehas. As does Shmuel. Shmuel comes from Korach, who's also from Kehas. So we know that within Levim, there is a difference within the different families of Levim. In Kohanim as well, there is a difference within the different families of Kohanim. Elazar's family and Isamar's family. There are 24 mishmaros, there are 24 rotations of Kohanim based on a breakdown of families. I am not personally familiar with how the 24 are set up. David HaMelech sets them up and they're listed in Divrei Hayamim. I don't know if it's 12 from Elazar and 12 from Isamar. I don't know how that breaks down. But it is worthwhile to be aware that even within Kohanim, there is a difference depending on which line of Kohanim a person is from. Yeah.
From the time that Hashem says, well, through Elkanah, this is going to happen, until the time that it actually happens is how long?
Well, Shmuel is going to be, he's going to be the Navi after Eli's death for, I believe, 12 years. We'll see the exact dates. I think it's something like 12 years. and David HaMelech is king for 40 years. And then Shlomo takes over and builds the Beis HaMikdash. So we're talking somewhere between 50 and 60 years down the line when the actual change happens. But there are already indications of it prior to that, as we'll see. So that is the story of the Kohanim. I want to move. Yes, you have a question?
So Samuel becomes the head Kohen.
No, Shmuel is a Levi. He becomes the head Navi.
Navi.
Yes.
Navi. Okay, so the Navi teaches the people. Goes around the whole.
There are several different types of leaders amongst the Jewish people. There are the Kohanim, who are leaders. There are the Nevi'im, who are leaders. There's the king. There's the Talmidei Chachamim, those who are Torah scholars.
Mm-hmm.
The leaders are, there are different types of leaders. It seems the expectation of going to the people it seems to be universal. There's an expectation that the leaders are accessible and able to go around to the people that need them. That's what it seems. I want to move now to the other issue that we need to discuss, and this one will take a little bit longer to develop. And that is the question of the punishment for the sons of Eli, that they are all going to die young, and it will go on, it seems, forever. We are aware of this. We are aware that this goes on forever. First of all, the Pesukim just say it, that they're all going to die young. But we're also aware of it because the Gemara says that the famous Amoraim, the famous Talmudic scholars, Rava and Abaye lived about halfway through the age of the Gemara, of the Talmud. So they lived, in terms of modern years, I can't give you exact dates, but somewhere in the 4th or early 5th century, somewhere in there. So Rava and Abaye, Rava died at age 40, and Abaye died at age 60. The Gemara says both of them were descendants of Eli, and therefore they should have died even younger than that. But the Gemara says that they were able to live a little bit longer because of the Torah that they studied and because of the chesed that they did. We'll learn about this a little bit more when we get into the third parak, third chapter of Shmuel. But the Gemara says that Rava, who was known for his Torah scholarship, that added some years onto his life and he was able to live 40 years, and Abaye, who was known not only for his Torah scholarship but also for his chesed, for his kindness, his acts of chesed, he was able to live 60 years. He lived until age 60. Age 60 may have been a relatively old age then.
Right.
And today we don't look at it as being that old, but back then, 60 may have been actually a pretty long lifespan. At any rate, both of them lived longer than they should have because they were children of Eli, and therefore they should have died even younger than that. So it went on, the punishment of the sons of Eli goes on, and it doesn't seem to end. Now, why is that difficult? It's difficult because the Torah says, there's two seemingly conflicting psukim in the Torah, and the Gemara addresses the conflict. There's one pasuk that says, Ish bechet o yumasu. Each man will die with his own sin. The beginning of the pasuk says that Banim lo yumsu al avos, va'avos lo yumsu al banim. Children will not die because of their fathers, and fathers won't die because of their sons. The Gemara says that's not referring to sins, that's referring to testimony, to edus, to testimony in court, that a father cannot testify against a son, a son cannot testify against the father, because they're relatives. But then the end of the pasuk says, Ish becheto yumasu, each man will die with his own sin. The implication being that one only is responsible for their own sins, not for the sins of others. Then there's another pasuk, a more famous pasuk, one that is found in the Aseret HaDibros, that says that Poked Avon Avos, Hashem visits or remembers the sins of the fathers, al banim, on the sons, al shileishim al ribayim, on third generation and fourth generation, on the grandsons and on the great grandsons, that Hashem will punish the children, even down to great grandchildren, for the sins of the great grandfather. So that seems to be contradictory. So the Gemara answers that it depends whether ochsim b'maisa avosim b'yadayim or not. It depends whether the children are perpetuating the sins of the ancestors. If the children are doing the same sin as the father, then they will get punished for their father's sin as well. If they are not, then ish b'cheto yumasu, each person dies with their own sin, not because of the sins of others. So the Gemara reconciles the apparent contradiction by saying that it depends on whether the children are repeating the sins of the earlier generations. If they are, then they're punished for earlier generations' sins as well, and if not, then they're not. So, yes?
But if you go to Adam and Chava, their sins we still pay yes. for today
okay,
too,
so,
right?
Yes, so that's another, we're going to get to that. Yeah. So,
well, they
have too. Okay, excellent. Those are two excellent cases, right? So the problem we have over here is that we find that sins are punished even beyond four generations. The sins of Adam and Chava, today it still goes on, we're still punished in that way, and the golden calf still goes on. So it doesn't seem to be limited only to three, four generations. And we have the sons of Eli, where it just keeps on going. Yeah.
What about the children of Korah? The little kids.
Okay, so hold on. So first we have to eliminate what we're not talking about, then we can discuss what we are talking about. We are not discussing here a person, all the cases where a person can be punished for somebody else's sin. There are many ways where one person's sin can affect other people. First of all, we know that there is a general rule, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, all Jews are responsible one for the other. And therefore, it is true that when any one of us, God forbid, sins, it affects everybody else. It's not someone's own business how they want to behave. You know, it's a very American thing. Listen, I'll do my thing, you do your thing, leave me alone. But we don't believe that. Because we do believe that whatever you do affects me, and whatever I do affects you, both good and bad. And therefore, we are responsible for each other's sins. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, and we are hurt by that. The Tochacha, where in the Chumash, where the punishments for everything that we do wrong are enumerated, it says that one of the things that's going to happen is v'chashlu ish be'achiv. Each man will trip over his friend. Rashi says each one will trip over the sins of the other, because we're all responsible for each other, and therefore we are unfortunately hurt by the sins of others. So that discussion is a separate discussion. How that works, when we're responsible, when we're not responsible, it seems like it has to do with having had the opportunity to admonish and not having admonished, things of that nature. But that's one type of way that a person can be punished for someone else's sin. And we're not discussing that this evening. That's a separate discussion. Another way that a person can be punished for somebody else's sin is that the Gemara says that a very righteous person could be punished for the sins of his generation. That a very righteous person could be put to death by Hashem in order to atone for the whole generation. Where there could be a situation where there would be a terrible, terrible decree from heaven that would affect the entire generation, and perhaps thousands of people would be killed and suffer because of the decree, because of the sins. And instead, Hashem takes one very righteous person and says, I will just take this person and that will atone for everybody else. That can happen as well. Many people believe that that is a Christian belief. It is not a Christian belief. That is a Jewish belief. The Christians took it from us. We do believe that can happen. And it does happen. Where we differ from the Christians, and this is a very significant difference, is that we only believe it can work for the past.
One generation.
No, it can be previous generations, but it only works for the past.
Not the future.
A person can atone for sins that have happened. Mm-hmm. No one can atone in advance. That there's no such thing. That is not true. That is impossible. We don't anticipate sins and then atone for it in advance. That does not happen.
What's the best example of that happening that we know of?
That we know of? The Gemara says in one situation where a person lost a child, and when they went to be Menachem Avol, so they told them, Chashuv at latfusei adara. You are chashuv enough. Your family is important enough that Hashem grabbed you for the whole generation. That to atone for the whole generation. But there's another example which it says, Mipnei hara'a nesafat tzadik. The pasuk says, because of the evil, the tzadik is gathered in. The tzadik is taken away. So what does that mean? So when my Rosh Yeshiva of Weinberg's Maracha was very sick, and he was it did not seem like he would recover, and he did not. He passed away. At that time, Rav Kolevsky, who at that time was now he's a Zichron Racha as well, but at the time he was the senior Rebbe in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and he succeeded Rabbi Weinberg as Rosh Yeshiva. So he said that based on this idea of Mipnei Hara Nesaf HaTzadik, that because of the evil the tzadik is taken away, he said it means one of two things. He said either it means that the tzaddik is taken away so that they don't see the evil. That if Hashem is about to bring something terrible, He removes the tzaddik so the tzaddik doesn't have to live through that terrible time.
Like Avram with Esau.
Right. That's one example. But then he said another explanation is that Hashem, that because of the evil, Hashem takes away the tzaddik to prevent the evil. That by taking away the tzaddik, that will prevent the evil.
We don't have names of that.
He told us at that time that it depends how we react. That if we react to his death with teshuvah, then it will be that he took him away to atone for everybody. If we ignore his death and we are apathetic, we just say, okay, you know, he's gone, then it would be that Hashem took him away so he shouldn't see the evil. And so that's what he said at the time in his shmuz at that time in the yeshiva. What would be another example? We find that... You find places where it says, right, in Sefer Yehoshua, when after the Battle of Jericho, and Achan takes from the spoils of war, and because of that they're going to lose the Battle of the Ai, the next battle of the city of Ai, and it says over there that a certain amount of people were killed. But the Gemara says it was not a certain amount of people, it was one person. And who was it? Let me just remember who it was. It was a great tzaddik, and he was killed, and that would atone for everybody else. And that way other people didn't die as well. Unfortunately, it is escaping my memory now.
Yeah,
Well, it doesn't say it.
Oh, it doesn't
it's a Rashi over there. Brings it. The Gemara says it. I should know who it is. What time?
It'll come to you.
Yeah, I hope it will.
At 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
No, don't say that.
That's okay. For this, I would welcome it. Okay, so anyway, so we do have examples like that. And there are other ones as well where it talks about that possibility. Yeah?
Well, would that apply also in today's day? Because it's past year, we lost
somebody. We don't know, though. Yeah, but we don't know. We can try to apply, but I always find that's an exercise in futility because we don't know. We're not Nevi'im, we have no idea. So I don't like to do it unless Chazal tell us.
Like the Rava and Abai, they died young, but it wasn't necessarily to rectify anyone else. It was just
from
that family.
Well, that we're going to talk about. Right. That we're going to discuss. Right.
Like who knows who's from what family
right.
at this point.
Right. So there are other examples of people dying because of other people's sins. It does happen. But we're not discussing all the examples of where one person could die for other people's sins. We want to focus on just this idea of the sins of parents being handed down to future generations. That's the only thing we're going to be discussing this evening, because that's the only part that we're discussing here in Sefer Shmuel. Now, in order to understand this, there's something very important which we have to think through. When the Gemara says that the sin can be perpetuated for three or four generations, The pasuk itself contrasts that. The Torah contrasts that to good, to tova. Because when it comes to good, it says Hashem holds on to the good for 2,000 generations. The Gemara says the ratio of good to bad is 500 to 1. Because it's 2,000 generations for good and only 4 generations for bad. So it's a good deal. It's 500 to 1. But nevertheless, it does get passed down. Even the evil gets passed down. So it's something to be aware of. So how do? So let's just understand what that means. We'll speak about, just to make it easier. It can work with women also, but we're going to talk about men just to make it easier. So you have a man, and he does a particular sin, and he doesn't do teshuvah. He does a particular sin, and let's say the sin is geneva, is theft. He steals. He's a burglar, so he steals. So that's a terrible sin. It's a terrible, terrible sin. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Everybody is not allowed to steal, and he does it. And he lives to be 120 years old, and then he dies, and he goes up to Shemayim, and they say, look, you know, you're gonna have to atone for the sin of theft, which you never did teshuva before. So he's punished. I mean, he gets whatever reward he gets, but he's also punished for that sin. Okay, that's very unfortunate. He has a son. That son also is a thief and doesn't do teshuva either. Now, we're not talking about a son who didn't know better. We're not talking about a son who was raised to be a thief. That would be no different than a tinok shenishba, than someone who couldn't know better, like someone who grew up without Torah and didn't keep Shabbos. They didn't know any better. You can't blame them for that. We're talking about someone who grew up knowing you're not supposed to steal. They knew better, they were taught not to do it, and they did it anyway, just like the father did it. And they did it anyway. And they live to be 120 years old, and they don't do teshuva, and they die. So they go up to Shemayim, and now they're told, you have to atone for your sin and for the sin of your father. Well, I didn't do my father's sins. Sorry, you did the same sin your father did, and therefore you are punished not only for your own sins, but for your father's sins. Now there's a grandson. And the grandson, same thing. He knew better, and he didn't prevent himself, and he stole just like his father and grandfather did. And when he gets up to Shemayim after 120 years, same thing. He's not only punished for his own sins, he's punished for his father's sins and his grandfather's sins. And he says, "What do you mean? I have nothing to do with that." Sorry, that's what it says in the pasuk. And then you have a great grandson, same thing. The great grandson may never have met his great grandfather, and yet when he gets to Shemayim, he's told, you have to atone for your sin, your father's sins, your grandfather's sins, and your great-grandfather's sins. And make no mistake, the father, grandfather, and great-grandfather already atoned. They were also punished. But it doesn't matter. The great-grandson is going to be punished four times over for his own sins, father's sins, grandfather's sins, great-grandfather's sins. It doesn't seem just. It doesn't seem fair. Now, when it comes to good, we don't care that it doesn't seem just. We'll accept it, right? So the same thing happens, right? The father did it was known for a particular mitzvah. The father was a Baal Chesed. You know, the man was a Baal Chesed. He did kindness. And now the son does the same thing, and the grandson, the great-grandson, and all the way down, it's the 50th generation later, comes up to Shemayim, he's known for being a Baal Chesed, and Hashem says, oh, we're going to give you a reward for everything you did, and your father, and your grandfather, and your great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather, I never knew these people. It doesn't matter. It's all yours. All this reward is heaped upon you, because you're in this line of generations of being Baal Chesed. So when it comes to good, we like the idea. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard to accept it as being just. Why should I be, God forbid, punished or rewarded for that which my great-grandfather, whom I never met, did? Yeah.
What if this son or grandson was not a thief when they get up?
Okay.
Are they still...
No. So that's what the Gemara distinguishes. That if they're not ochsin b'maisa v'asim yedim, if they don't do the sins of the fathers, then they don't get punished for the father's sins.
Okay, thank
right.
you.
Now, it's not clear to me whether it breaks the line or not. Meaning that somebody asked me this. I spoke about this to the men on Shabbos in anticipation of this year. I actually tried it out on them on Shabbos. So it wasn't recorded then. So somebody asked me, well, what happens if the father was a the original guy was a thief, and so was the son, but the grandson wasn't, and then the great grandson was. So then does it go back? I don't know. I don't know if the fact that the grandson wasn't, that kind of stops it, now it starts over again, or whether it's still within four generations, so there still is an element of punishment. I don't know.
All right, so what happens? The father produces a mamzer. He asks for forgiveness, he does shuva, but still there's a mamzer, okay? The mamzer leads a stellar life, but still his kids can't marry in.
Yes.
Like it perpetuates,
yes.
even though he never did anything wrong. His
good.
Father did tshuva.
Good.
I don't get it.
Okay, that's a little different than here because that's a status. That's not necessarily a punishment. It's a status. But it is similar to this. We find that it goes on for all generations.
But isn't it like the Kohen name? Like the,
okay,
it's
so
the
let's,
status
okay.
thing, right?
Yeah, so we have to get to that. But first let's understand the four generation thing before we go to things that are beyond the four generations. So that's what happens. That is what the Torah says is going to happen. So even to us, it doesn't seem like it should be... it doesn't seem like that's what the system should be. It seems a little bit unfair. That why should I be punished for something that my great grandfather did when I never met him? But that is the system that the Torah says is in place. But there's two limitations to this system. One is it only goes on for four generations, and two is that it's only if each generation is doing what the previous generation did. And by the way, let's say the great-great-grandson is a thief, so then he'll be punished for what he did, and his father, and his grandfather, and his great-grandfather, but not for what the great-great-great-grandfather did, because that's five generations, and he won't get punished for that, even though it's all one long line of thieves, it won't make a difference. It's only four generations. So there's two limitations. There's the amount of generations it goes, and also the fact that if someone doesn't do it, then he's not punished for the previous generations. Here, with the B'nai Eli, and also with the Golden Calf, and also with Adam and Chava, and perhaps we'll include the Mamzer case as well, I don't know if we include that or not yet, but both things don't seem to apply. First of all, it goes on forever. It doesn't stop that for four generations. And second of all, it doesn't make a difference if the person is righteous or not. Even if the person doesn't do this sin that was done before, none of us, I don't think, have worshipped the golden calf. Right? And yet, we are all punished for the golden calf. We can't get away from that. But we never did it. Now, perhaps you can argue that it's true we don't do it, but we still act in a way that is similar to what they did with the golden calf. Maybe you could argue something like that, that our behavior still is lacking in a very similar way to the way their behavior was lacking. Maybe that's true, I don't know. But it still seems that we're not all doing what they did. And yet the Torah says that the future generations will be punished for the golden calf. So it's something which needs explanation. So in order to understand it, what we first need to do is understand well this idea of four generations. Let's tackle this and make a suggestion over here. Why is it that the grandson, if he is a thief, just like his father, just like his grandfather, why should it be that he be punished three times over? That he's punished for his sins, his father's sins, and his grandfather's sins. Why should that be? What responsibility could he have for the sins? It's one thing, it should be the other way around. I can understand that a parent to be punished for the child's sins, perhaps you could say because the parent should have done a better job in influencing the child. Maybe you could say that. You know, obviously it's very complicated, it's not always in a simple matter, but at least there's some logic to that. But why should a grandson could affect the grandfather's behavior? Even if they lived at the same time, the grandfather and the grandson interacted with each other. How many grandchildren can affect the behavior of their grandparents? It's hard enough to affect the behavior of your own parents. Yes. Your grandparents? I mean, it seems so unreasonable. So why should the grandson be held accountable or be punished for something that happened in previous generations? So it would seem then... I don't know that we would have made up this system in our sense of right and wrong because we're affected by our culture around us, but the Torah is saying that it seems that the Torah is saying that there is a responsibility on each and every one of us to not only perfect ourselves, which of course we have that responsibility, that's why we're here, for Shlemus, in order to perfect ourselves in our service of Hashem. But it seems that there is an added responsibility in perfecting our line, our family line. That we didn't get here by ourselves. We are here through our parents, who were here through their grandparents, through their parents, etc., all the way back. And as a result, there is a responsibility that we have that the buck stops with us. That if there's something in our line which doesn't seem right, it is our responsibility to stand up and say, Ad kan v'sulo, until here, no further. It's not going on. I am stopping this behavior pattern that is in my family. It seems that that is a responsibility on each and every one of us. And that if a person doesn't do that, then in some manner, they are held accountable for the previous sins. I don't know that it means that they're punished as much as the previous generations were punished for their sins. But it seems to be that there is some element of responsibility they have that you didn't stop the negative behavior. That there is a greater responsibility in stopping that which has been done the past few generations than stopping other types of negative behavior. Of course, we're responsible for all of our behaviors, but something which was done by the previous generations, it seems like we each have responsibility to say, my family line can't be known for this sin. It is a blemish on my family line, and it is my responsibility to stand up and say, that's it, it's not happening any further. And if I don't do that, God forbid, then I'm also held accountable for what happened in the past. Yeah.
I think it's true that our behaviors affect our family members who have died before us, you know. So is it also a form of, like, not doing keep it aim?
That's an interesting suggestion. You're right that when people pass away, ancestors pass away, so then we have the ability to improve their position in the next world. That's why we give tzedakah, and that's why we daven, and we learn for them, and then we say yizkor. All that is for previous generations, and it's the right thing to do.
What about Queen Esther?
And I'm sorry, just one thing. Yeah. So you're suggesting that's a responsibility that we have, that we have a responsibility to elevate their souls. That's part of part of our kibud of aim that we have.
Right, and we don't correct ourselves, and
so then we're not taking that responsibility. Mm-hmm. It could be that's true. Could be that's involved as well. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Well, Queen Esther had to rectify what Shaul did.
Yeah. Okay. That's many generations later. Yeah. You had a question?
Yeah. When you say when you get up to Shemayim, you're going to be said, okay, you did the same avera.
I mean, we hope not.
Is it just of one relative, or let's say you had 50 cousins that were all doing it, how does that work?
A person, in this context, the person is only responsible for what came before them, but you're saying is it diffused amongst many, many...
I had 50 cousins the generation before, and the generation before, you know...
I don't know. I think it's only direct line. That's what it seems.
The direct line is just father to child.
Yeah, that's what it seems. Parent to child.
So both parents to each child?
I think so. But I can't say for sure. I don't know for sure how these things work. I can only deal with what the pasuk says.
And is this only biological parents?
I imagine.
So if somebody's adopted, they're off the hook.
Yeah. All this logic would only work in situations where a person knows who their parents are. Because you can't say to a person, you had a responsibility to stop the behavior, if he didn't know the behavior of the family, of the people before him. So that doesn't make any sense.
In that sense, gerim and adoptive people are...
Right.
They don't have to worry about it.
Right. I don't know. We all have to worry about perfecting ourselves.
Does it mean that we should always be aware of all the sins of our parents? Because we don't usually know.
Right. I don't think so. I don't think it means that. I think it means that if a person knows what the previous generation did wrong, then there's an added responsibility to make sure that we don't do the same thing wrong. I think that's all it means. And bear in mind, we're not talking about sins. We're talking about people doing sins when they knew better. That's why I picked the case of theft. Everybody knows you're not supposed to steal. It doesn't make a difference what kind of upbringing you had. You know you're not supposed to steal. That's why I picked that example. If a previous generation didn't keep Shabbos, so they didn't know better. They're not held responsible for it, and we're not held responsible for it. They didn't know any better, so that's the way it is. But something which they did know better, and we know better, there's an added responsibility to fix it. So it seems that if we're going to understand the four-generation thing in this way, then it would seem then that to understand how the Bnei Eli could go on forever, and these other sins that we're talking about, is that if a type of if a sin is so egregious that it affects much more than just that generation, if it's a terrible, terrible sin, the Radak and the Rabag say over here, Chilul Hashem, where one is profaning God's name, something as bad as that, the sin is so terrible, it can go on for more than four generations. In other words, when the Torah says four generations for sins and 2,000 generations for mitzvos, the Torah means, quote-unquote, regular sins and regular mitzvos. It's talking about the typical type of averos that go on. But there can be averos that are so bad that the responsibility to correct it is so much greater that it will go on beyond four generations. It can even go on for hundreds of generations. And it seems that the sins of the Bnei Eli, as much as we diminish them in the past couple of weeks because we're talking about great tzaddikim, but nevertheless, on their level, the type of avera that was done had within it Chilul Hashem, and therefore it goes on beyond four generations. And it keeps on going. That's how the Radak and the Rabag address this issue. Now, that only addresses the length of time, that it goes beyond four generations. But what about the fact that even those who weren't doing the same sins are also being punished, where we said that in regard to, let's say, theft, if the grandson is not a thief, he's not going to be punished for the previous generations. But here, the 10th generation after Eli also dies young, even if they don't do the same sins as Eli's sons. They don't do that same Chilul Hashem. So it seems that that in addition to the sin being so terrible that it goes on for many generations, but, and this is really similar to what you were saying, Mrs. Starkman, that sometimes a sin can be such, let's say theft, like we were talking about, where as long as the grandson doesn't do it, then he's not going to be punished. Because he didn't do it. He didn't perpetuate the sin. But sometimes there could be sins that are so bad that it's not good enough to not do it. There has to be active work to reverse it. The blemish on the family, because of the terrible, terrible sin that went on, is so bad that if the family doesn't work to reverse it, then they're still held accountable. Whereas, let's say a typical, quote-unquote, typical sin, it only goes four generations, and all that it takes to stop it is, don't do it. But these really terrible sins, like the golden calf, I mean, it's hard to imagine a greater sin than that, because if they had just gotten the Torah, they just had the greatest revelation that mankind has ever had of Hashem, and then they committed the sin of the golden calf. For us to not be punished for the sin of the golden calf, it's not good enough to say, I don't worship golden calves. So, I am therefore exempt from all responsibility. Hashem says, that's not good enough. It was such a bad sin, and we are descendants of those who did it, that we are responsible to reverse it, to turn it around, not just to not do it. And therefore, since future generations have not reversed the golden calf, we know that because Mashiach hasn't come yet, and Mashiach would come if that sin were reversed. Therefore, all future generations are punished for the golden calf. With the sons of Eli, it wasn't good enough to just not do what they did wrong. It required reversing the sin. How does one reverse the sin of Chilul Hashem, of profaning God's name? That's what the Gemara says with Rava and Abaye. The study of Torah, and even more so, the study of Torah coupled with Chesed, those two powerful, powerful mitzvos, perhaps the most powerful mitzvahs that we have, those can reverse the sins of the Bnei Eli. Interestingly, davening, which you would think is the third of the most powerful mitzvahs that we have, study of Torah, chesed, and davening is not included in what can help the sons of Eli. And the reason why it's not included is because davening is avoda, is service. And davening is replacing what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Bnei Eli tainted the work in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, to reverse the sin, it's got to be something beyond that. It can't be just service to the Beis HaMikdash. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be something. The other two great mitzvahs that there are to do, which is the study of Torah and also Chesed. And you understand, of course, when we say the study of Torah, we mean either the study itself or the enabling the study of Torah. Both are the same thing. Making the study of Torah happen. Both are the study of Torah. So this is an explanation for how we could have these sins perpetuated like this. This is something which these are questions which many people have. I've struggled with these questions for many, many years of how you could have sins that seem to go on forever and ever. And this is an approach. I'm not suggesting this is the only approach, but I think it is a workable approach where there could be sins, as the Radak and the Rabak say, like Chilul Hashem, that are so bad that they go on beyond four generations, and that there is an expectation not only to stop doing it, but there's an expectation to reverse the sin. And that's why it can keep going, and it can even affect people who don't seem to be doing the same sin. This does not cover all the other types of ways that a person could be responsible for somebody else's sin. This is not an exhaustive study of all the things that a person could be responsible for.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.